When song can change a moment, when idea can change a world, when step can start a journey, but a prayer can change even the impossible. Your belief is your prayer. Welcome to the Believe Show, 1 hour of motivation and inspiration for your Sunday. I'm your host, Barbara Bruce. And now via phone for our motivational segment of the show, I have with me a wonderful author. And I can't wait to find out more about him, because when I read his book, From a Tilted Pail, I knew that I was going to speak with someone that had great introspection. And I am speaking with Ajay Viswanathan. I am so glad to have you with me today. And obviously, people will know that you have an accent and that you are from another part of the world, and that would be India.
That is correct.
I understand that you live in Atlanta, Georgia today. And I can tell you that I actually am from Birmingham, Alabama, and we always called Atlanta Hotlanta.
It is very hot right now, by the way.
It is, but we called it Hotlanta because there was always so much to do over there. Such an incredible area, rich with culture, but beaming with activities for people to actually come and get involved in.
It is. In fact, this weekend is the Decatur Book Festival, which is extremely popular.
And of course, that's an important thing for all people that are in literary, because you want to be noticed at that festival. And of course, you have quite the bio. Tell us a little bit about yourself before we get into the book.
Well, I was born in Mumbai, India, and I lived there for 25 years. And then I came to USA to do my PhD in microbiology. And I finished my PhD, and then I got my first job at Emory University in working with HIV and AIDS prevention. And then later on, I got a job at CDC, which is the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And I continued to work on HIV and AIDS prevention. So that's where I work right now, and that's my day job.
And I love that you say that it's your day job, because one of the things that I happen to be aware of is that many people that are scientists are not the kind of people to write the type of short story book that you have written.
Well, I think I've been very fortunate, because when I sit to write, you know, my wife gives me so much of space, and she's my biggest critique, and that allows me to spend some time with my laptop, and so I would like to give her the credit for that.
I think it's wonderful. Many of us have grown up on short stories, and then all of a sudden it seems like people quit writing short stories. But in a world today where we have so much going on and we don't have a lot of time, how wonderful to be able to pick up a book and read something really with substance in a very short period of time. And your seven stories, some are very, very deep, but they all are with regard to the human condition.
I think when people, publishers, tell me that short stories don't sell nowadays, it kind of baffles me for exactly the same reason, because people don't have time nowadays. And when you have a story that you can complete in 20 minutes, I thought personally that would be more attractive to the audience, but apparently not. Apparently short stories don't sell as well as novels.
Well, you and I are on the same page, because I really do believe that we are busy. And so often we've been told by scientists, as a matter of fact, and psychologists, that whatever we read or watch just before we go to bed at night is imprinted on our subconscious. So why wouldn't we want to pick up something that is short, because usually we get tired and fall asleep, that has substance, that makes us feel good or makes us think?
Totally agree.
Your stories are about India, and of course you can tell that you have great love for your country.
India, according to me, is heart. India is clutter. Once the cloud settles, people who go to India, you will notice the vibrant colors and hear the sounds of an imposing history. So that's what I feel about India.
Well, of course, the thing that came to my mind when I first picked up your book was a movie that I have watched over and over and over again, and it's The Most Exotic Marigold Hotel. Are you familiar with that?
Yes.
Well, I have watched it so many times, because Sunny, who is in India, is so positive, so uplifting. He has a dream, and he really wants everybody to benefit. And his one saying throughout the book, or throughout the movie, actually, is everything will be all right in the end. And if it's not all right, it's not the end.
Beautiful.
I love that. I've plastered it everywhere that I can possibly find it. And your stories are rich like that. Even though there's some sadness in some of the stories, it's the outcome that matters. It makes you stop and think about people in general, because whether you're in India or some other part of the world, we all are really alike.
Right. No, I agree. I think I love what you just now said. And if you notice, most of my endings are quite open-ended. And the reason, there are many reasons for that. One of them is hope. I think hope is one of the most valuable, most underrated jewels we humans have. And most characters in these stories, they fight their way through a struggle. So leaving the story open-ended allows room for hope that everything might get ironed out and life will be back on track, just as you said.
We have to believe that. I think that hope is a message that we all need today, no matter what we're going through. Because, again, we look around the whole world and we see everyone having crises, one after another, it seems. And if we know or we read about someone that has overcome a difficulty, then we feel like that we can do it too, especially when they're regular people that you write about.
Well said. I agree.
When you started writing the book, putting all the stories together, and of course you've written many other things. Anyone that goes to your website or searches you on Google, they'll find that you have written many things and been recognized throughout for your poetic way of saying things. It's almost like you're reading a poetry book, because your language is rich. It's words that often... I admire the British because they always use the most wonderful vocabulary, but yours is rich with poetry and words that we all can drink in, but it paints such a beautiful picture.
Thank you so much. That's very generous. I think the words are very important. I mean, when you read people like Sumonk Kidd or Khalid Husseini, or even a recent book by Vade Ratner, from the, I think it's called the In the Shadow of the Banyan, when you read from their pages, you sense a great tide of emotions flowing underneath. I think that's so important in a story, in your words, that you need to sound so genuine. You have to connect to the audience in that particular way, and I think words are very important.
Have you known characters like the characters that you speak of in the book, in the different stories?
Not personally, but then it shows up. I mean, it's so deeply ingrained. Although I was born and raised in a big metro like Mumbai, these themes of poverty and child marriage and child labor, those things are they don't escape you, because they are, you read it so often. You hear about it in your grandma's stories so often that deeply ingrained in you. So I think that's the reason why they come out in my stories.
In India, you pass stories on. Is that how they usually are passed from one generation to the other?
Mostly. Especially when you, as a kid, a lot of people cannot afford, especially if you're lower middle class. So you actually are lying on your grandmother's lap, and then you have a story being told to you. It's usually how it works.
And I think that way is definitely still going on, with grandmas telling stories to their young grandchildren, or we say to our nieces and nephews. What is your favorite short story in the book?
What is my favorite short story in the book? Well, I like a couple of them, actually. I like Auras of Glass and The Keeper of Lamps, and I think both of them have characters where they struggle and they are exposed to pain. But then at the end of it, there is hope, as I said, and there is an escape. And I like those characters. I also like the way the story flowed for me. Some stories, they linger. They kind of languish. After a while, you wonder where you want to go with the character. But these two stories just came along. And I knew exactly where I wanted it to end. And it worked out well. So I like these stories, Auras of Glass and The Keeper of Lamps.
And I actually picked out The Keeper of Lamps as my favorite.
You did.
I like the characters, like you said. And I think that when we start off, and like I said, you write with such poetry, it starts off, it is almost six. The sky is a deep, sulking blue as it awaits daylight. Well, you had me right there.
You know what? My wife loves that line. It's amazing that you picked that line out.
It's just so poetic and it's beautiful. It starts to describe it. Of course, the very next line that follows is, I apply a quick wash of golden shadow over my eyelids, the final coat of mascara, and look into the mirror. I think any of us women can definitely relate to that. But we saw a picture. And so often we go to the movies and we love the movies, but if you've read the book, you usually don't like the movie as well. And I think it's because you don't get to use your own imagination.
You're right. Well, that's the problem with because in stories, in the book, you can go into those details, whereas the director is bound by time. He has just 2 hours to get his message across. So I'm sure he uses his discretion as to what he needs in the movie and what he does not. So you're right. A lot of it gets lost in that.
I think that is most probably true. Did you always want to write, or did you write as a child?
I did. When I was, I was an eight-year-old, my dad, he bought me a Hermes Baby typewriter, and it had cursive font. And I think that's where it all started, because I remember writing dramatic stories about long-haired, nose-bleeding men knocking on people's doors. Quite funny. He actually showed me that when I went to India a couple of years ago. And, well, after 20 pages, I would move on to another story. But the good thing these days is I wrap up my stories, Barbara.
You wrap them up rather fast, but again, going back to most people that I know, they're very busy, and people that love to read want to have something with them at all times. Now, I see a lot of people out, you know, you're waiting in lines, and in the past, we would wait in a line, and we were so impatient, but it doesn't matter anymore. People grab their Kindle, or they grab their iPhone, and they're immediately on the email, or on Google, or playing a game. It occupies us until we actually get to the place in the line that we can be taken care of. But that's really not the way that we should drink in something that we are trying to have to nourish our minds, because we either read for entertainment or we read because we're trying to improve ourselves in some way.
Right. Well, I think the attention span is falling so dramatically that people cannot remain focused on one thing for more than 5 minutes. And I think it's almost become, it's become a pathological thing, because if you cannot focus in one subject, either you're talking to somebody or you're looking at the screen or you're looking at a book, and in 5 minutes you have to do something else, I mean, your attention span is getting shorter and shorter, and it's not a good sign at all, Barbara.
It definitely is not. They say that we don't have boundaries anymore. And
No, you're right. I was agreeing with you. We have no boundaries.
This is a good place for us to take a quick break so that we can come back and talk about some of those issues regarding boundaries and what we can do to improve ourselves. We'll be right back with more of The Believe Show.